KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 25th Cascade Festival of African Films, happening Thursdays through Sundays, now through March 8th, in celebration of Black History Month at Portland Community College Cascade Campus. The theme this year is Africa Through African Lenses, and features the films Half of a Yellow Sun, Finding Fela, Lessons of Basketball and War, Under the Starry Sky, and many more. That's the 25th Cascade Festival of African Films at PCC Cascade 705 North Killingsworth in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Where is your radio dial on Thursday afternoons from noon until 2? 90.7 FM is the place to be. Twice a month, DJ Charlie presents the World Beat Connection with the hottest Afro-Caribbean sounds in Portland radio land. Reggae, salsa, soca, New Orleans Afro-funk, Haitian compa and rara, and Antillean zouk share the airwaves with African highlife. Afrobeat, Congolese soukous, Malian blues, juju, and South African quake among the other great styles. Traditional and modern expressions are all included. On alternate weeks, check out Top Rankin Reggae and Dancehall with Shocks of Sheba show hosted by Teresa and Michelle. Any week, Thursdays at noon is sure to move ya.
Well, good morning. This is Fight the Empire, and today we're gonna kind of focus on Ukraine. But first, I want to say we need to say something about oil, because that kind of underlies so many of the troubles in the world today. We see that the price is going back up again. You know, it was just a couple of years ago, the price of oil was up around $147 a barrel. Then it dropped way down to, I believe, around $40, back up to about, I think, $120. And then it went down to, I believe, a little below $50, and now it's kind of rising again. So it's been kind of going up and down like a yo-yo. And this is not good for long-term investors. Long-term investors do not like instability. It's kind of really messes up their calculations. But nobody really knows exactly how much oil there is anyway. We've been hearing a lot about an oil glut. We'll get into that in about a minute or so. I just read the other day that this is from Georgia Monbiot, writing in the, I believe, The Guardian, who says that whistleblowers from the International Energy Agency are saying that the agency upgraded its estimates of how much oil there is in the world. They did that because they didn't want to frighten the markets. So apparently there is less oil than the official sources are telling us. Nobody really knows for sure, but we keep hearing about this oil glut. We heard all sorts of predictions that the U.S. would become kind of like Saudi America. We would be back in charge of the world again because we control the oil. Didn't turn out that way. This new oil, it came from the fracked regions of North Dakota and Texas. And it turns out that fracked oil does not last very long. You know, a regular oil well goes on and on and on for years. But fracked oil, it depletes after 1 or 2 years very quickly. So the big the drop in prices has driven some of the marginal drillers out of business because it costs more to get the oil out than they are getting back in profits. So they were driven out. And then what happens is that as some of these drillers leave, the surplus gets used up, and then prices spike again. And this time they may well spike for good because there is no little bonanza like the fracked oil waiting in the wings. So what happens then is that as the sort of window of opportunity starts to close, it looks to me like the U.S. is getting more desperate. We need oil more than anybody else in the world because we are the biggest per capita consumers of oil. And I think it explains why the U.S. keeps going to war. We've been at war constantly now, as long as I can remember, practically. But the U.S. is now engaged in a proxy war in Ukraine. It's engaged in real shooting wars elsewhere in the Middle East. The trouble with war is that it uses up oil. So you're fighting for oil, but you're using it up at the same time. A few years ago, the Pentagon did some war games, in future scenarios, to see if there was any room for military operations in these future scenarios. And apparently, from what I read, is that the war games all lose. None of the war game scenarios got what they intended to. Well, if oil becomes expensive again, and it seems to be heading that way, one effect of that would mean less trade. So then you wonder why is Nicaragua building a canal, to tap the Asian market when there'll probably less trade in the future? Another thing it means is that the U.S., because of long supply lines, the U.S. is further away from the world power center, which is actually in Europe and Asia. When you look at the map, you will see that, geography rules. Eurasia is the biggest landmass in the world. It has the most population. It has the most of the resources. And it has all it needs right there in Eurasia. There's no need to import stuff from anywhere else in the world, really, because it's all there. And oil and gas can be shipped by pipeline. So that's a background to what is going on in Ukraine. We could go in, spend a lot of time discussing the history of the Ukraine and the whole thing with NATO and what NATO is trying to do. But let's just focus now on, for the America, the real prize is Russia. Russia still has oil. It has a lot of gas. Russia is one of the three largest oil and gas producers in the world, the other being Saudi Arabia and some of the Gulf kingdoms and Iran and Iraq if they get their thing together. So in Ukraine, if the real prize is Russia and the war in Ukraine is just sort of the first of several fronts. Now, according to some observers, the next front, the U.S. What they're trying to do is basically encircle Russia and make inroads into the Russian-Chinese sort of partnership. You have Russia and China, and you have a lot of these Turkic-speaking nations, and you have this Eurasian the Chinese are building all kinds of railroads and pipelines and highways connecting this Eurasian giant. I read the other day, I think the first train from China all the way to Spain came to Spain with this cargo of goods. And this may be the first of many such trips. So the next front, according to some observers, will be Nagorno-Karabakh. And this is a region, it's part of... Well, it's actually surrounded by Azerbaijan, which is in the South Caucasus. It sort of borders, is close to Russia, and it borders Iran and Armenia. And Nagorno-Karabakh is a region within Azerbaijan that is populated mainly by Armenians who have taken over. And so there's been this land dispute now going on for many years about this province. And apparently it is heating up again. Also, there are more incidents going on in Central Asia. That will be the next front in this kind of onslaught against Russia. And it's very interesting that Victoria Nuland, the famous cookie lady of Ukraine, has been visiting Azerbaijan and Armenia and Georgia. And you wonder just exactly what is Victoria Nuland up to? Is she promoting the next war that's supposed to go after Russia? Also, Special envoy from the European Union has been visiting the South Caucasus. So we may really wonder what kind of troubles they are stirring up. The U.S. strategy seems to be to split Russia and Europe. When you look at the map, and remember geography rules, Europe is kind of like an appendage at the very edge of the Eurasian landmass. All trade, just economics would sort of indicate that trade would be with the nations of Eurasia, because you don't have to cross an ocean to send goods and people back and forth. And so the U.S. sees this, if Europe, especially Germany, gets sort of taken in by the Eurasian market, then that is another market that is lost to the United States. And we see that Russia is moving towards China. They've signed, almost $1 trillion in oil and gas deals. And it's very interesting that while this is going on, Ukraine has become a gateway for jihad. There are the Intercept website recently. That's a new website with Glenn Greenwald and Jeremy Scahill. And they had an article recently about Islamic State fighters in Ukraine. And they went into detail. They described them. These are warriors who are connected to Islamic State, you know, the arch terrorists, the people who chop off heads, and they are in Ukraine, and they see this as a stopping off point. Once they battle Russia in Ukraine, they are going to continue to battle Russia in the Caucasus, places like Georgia and Central Asia. So that is something to look for in the future. We also get an interesting article. He's been writing about this a lot, is Michael Hudson. Now, he's an economics professor. I think he's based at the University of Missouri in Kansas City, but he's also in New York a lot. And you can see him on the internet doing interviews. And he has an interesting thing to say. This is a quote: "Finance is a new kind of warfare." In other words, the people who are trying to rule the world, who have ruled the world until now, and see their rule slipping, they can start wars, but they get their profits through finance, through debt. You get a nation into debt, and then you can start repossessing that nation a little bit at a time. You might recall a few years ago, there came this book, I Was an Economic Hitman, by, I can't think of his name right now. He's a guest on this show, as a matter of fact. The Economic Hitman, he tells how he was working for a company that was run by the CIA, and he'd go around the world and enticing different rulers into borrowing money at exorbitant interest. And so this is what allows the bankers to basically repossess nations. And this is what Michael Hudson has been writing about a lot. I would look him up sometime. Another interesting thing in Ukraine is that Monsanto, everybody's famous favorite big ag corporation, they are leasing land in Ukraine, and I guess they are planning to introduce their GMO patented seeds in Ukraine, which is one thing Ukraine does have is very rich soil. Meanwhile, Ukraine's economy is collapsing very quickly. Just the other day, they passed an austerity budget to get a $17 billion bailout from the International Monetary Fund. You may recall that this was sort of the reason for the war in Ukraine in the first place. That President Yanukovych decided to, if his country needed bailing out, he was going to go to Russia for the simple fact that he could get a better deal from Russia. But the population erupted with a lot of help from neo-fascist groups. They forced Yanukovych, who was elected, they forced him out of office. And so the Ukrainians, in their way, decided that they were going to go with the whatever deal Europe offered. Well, Europe's offer is a $17 billion bailout with all kinds of austerity cuts, pensions being cut, price of gas to rise, all sorts of things like that. Meanwhile, the National Bank of Ukraine has upped its interest rate to 30%. So if you want to lend Ukraine some money, you can charge 30% interest. Of course, you may never get the money back, but if you do, you make a tidy profit. Inflation in Ukraine is up apparently 272%. And guess who's saying that? The Cato Institute, the libertarian think tank. Also, Ukraine's Delta Bank, which is the fourth biggest, has gone belly up. Ukraine's currency, which is called the hryvnia, is down 51% against the dollar. And then an interesting thing is Ukraine had a sort of strategic food supplies stationed around the country for hard times. And the hard times came, and when President Poroshenko decided to open up this food reserve, they found it was empty. Where did the food go? Well, people are not quite sure. Some say that, they had to feed their army, which has been fighting the separatists in the east, or it may have just been sold off someplace, but apparently the larder is empty. So things do not look good in Ukraine for the empire. There are desperate times, as another American adventure is really falling apart. You know, we had Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Syria. All these little warlike adventures have led to greater catastrophes, and now it's happening in Ukraine. You wonder, what is going on? Why does why do our leaders still listen to these warmongering people in Washington? Robert Perry described the sort of the atmosphere in Washington as he called it, quote, a swaggering goofiness. And I think that's a wonderful phrase. Remember that, a swaggering goofiness. Things the world that these neocons and warmongers are trying to create is quickly falling apart. It's leading to one catastrophe after another, and they keep going on for more. There are people like McCain and others who they want to send troops into Ukraine, and so it's a really dicey situation. Apparently, according to some, they are trying to provoke Russia into going to war. That would suit their purposes just fine if Russia really went to war over Ukraine. But apparently, at least from in my opinion, whatever you want to say about Vladimir Putin, he is certainly smarter than any leader we have in Washington. A little sidelight here, in the middle of all this catastrophe, Russian opposition leader Boris Nemtsov was gunned down in Moscow. I won't go into all the details exactly. He was walking across his bridge from downtown Moscow to his apartment with his woman from Ukraine who came to visit, and they were shot. He was gunned down. The shooter jumped in a passing car and off they went and escaped. Those are the bare bones. There's a lot of details coming out about this investigation. And if you want to read about that, go to the Russian sources, because they're the ones who are conducting the investigation, such as it is. I have no idea whether they're conducting a real honest one or not. You have to read their facts and find out. But one of the first questions that was asked when Nemtsov was gunned down was, who profits by this? The U.S. is pointing fingers at our old enemy, Vladimir Putin. But when you think about it, and even mainstream experts had to admit this, that Putin stands to gain nothing by killing Nemtsov. In fact, he stands to lose a whole lot, for the simple reason that Boris Nemtsov was a fairly well-known guy, not terribly liked by everybody. He had his support in Russia was about 1 or 2%, whereas Putin's support is about 80%. So it's like Putin had absolutely no motive to have Nemtsov killed. Another interesting thing, we talk about the opposition to Putin in Russia. We hear about it all the time. The main opposition in Russia is the Communist Party. It's not these neoliberals, it's the communists who are the main opponents of Vladimir Putin. And also, finally, one interesting thing that happened is Nemtsov was killed close to midnight on, I think, February 28th. And within just a little over 24 hours, when they had this march to honor his memory, they had T-shirts, four-color T-shirts with Nemtsov's face on them, printed in Russian and Ukrainian. And somebody raised the issue, how could they have gotten that done so fast? 24 hours, they had to design the T-shirt, separate the colors, lay it out, get them all printed up in Russian and Ukrainian, and then distribute them to all the people at this march. Well, maybe it can be done. I don't know. It's very interesting that it was done very quickly. Well, when we talk about economies collapsing, we can move on to Greece. Greece recently got some kind of a bailout from Europe, and there's a lot of controversy. Is this a defeat for the Syriza government, the leftist government of Greece, or are they buying more time? The government claims that they are getting more time to get their act together, where other voices on the left and the right see this as a big defeat, that they are caving into the European bankers. I don't know myself. I think we'll have to wait to find out about that. One thing we do know is that The Greek Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras says that there will be no third bailout in June. So there is a kind of a deadline here. Apparently, after all this austerity, Greece's debt is not going down, it's going up. In 2012, the debt was 157% of gross domestic product. 2 years later, in 2014, it has gone up to 182%. Well, this raises a question is, what is all this austerity for if the debt keeps rising anyway? Can this debt ever be repaid? Well, probably what Greece needs to do more than anything else is to build its solidarity economy. And they do have that going on right now. They have food networks and other kinds of service networks where people are sort of creating their own economy within the ruins of the old. And this is to be encouraged. And any country that can't feed itself is really at the mercy of its enemies. If you can't feed yourself, then you better have some good friends. Well, Greece may have some friends in Russia and China. We will have to wait and see what happens there. Because Russia and China are coming together, like I said before, in this kind of Eurasian giant that may just take in Greece and other nations to create a sort of a newer world order. In fact, it's interesting that Russia has they're building a new gas pipeline to provide gas to Europe, which would avoid Ukraine, and the pipeline would end at Greece. It would go through Turkey and end at Greece, and then Greece would sort of be the distribution point. This is very interesting. But it looks to me like these debts will never be repaid, especially if the price of oil goes back up again. This really limits growth. And without growth, debts don't get paid. And this is the big problem. And so if debt doesn't get paid, well, you can try, and I've been trying to puzzle out all the consequences of that now for a while, but it would be like really economic chaos. Well, we can talk about Greece paying its debts. Venezuela is in a kind of a sticky situation. With the lower price of oil, they find that they are not... the price of food is going up, and people have asked, you know, what happened to the land reform in Venezuela? I do have a story. It's not time to go into it here, but the Venezuelan delegate to the UN Food and Agriculture Organization says that actually Venezuela is building its own food self-sufficiency, and they talk about urban farming in Caracas, kind of modeled after the urban farming in Havana. So they are trying to build a solidarity economy. And finally, in Nigeria used to export food not too many years ago. Then with their oil money coming in, they used that oil money to import food. And now with the price of oil going down, they find themselves in a food bind too. So this just shows a danger of relying on this global market. Best thing is to be as self-sufficient as you can, and then have good friends who will help you out and not try to exploit you. So that's the end of this show, Ukraine Beyond Ukraine, and we will keep posted as things develop. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned for Air Cascadia.
That's right. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Air Cascadia coming right up with Ann Wright with Code Pink joining Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints will feature General David Petraeus getting a slap on the wrist for passing top secret government documents to his girlfriend and then lying about it to the FBI. Also, the cop who gunned down Michael Brown in Ferguson will not be prosecuted on civil rights charges, and the daughter of a Jewish Holocaust survivor speaks out against the Israeli Prime Minister's speech before Congress. At 11 on Between the Covers, host David Naiman speaks with Kelly Link about her new novel, Get in Trouble. And at 11:30 on Black Book Talk, author Renee Watson discusses her novel, This Side of Home. That's all coming up right after we hear from Chris Andre on Air Cascadia. Keep in mind, it's Ann Wright with Code Pink on the show today. Also, headlines, interviews, and commentary coming right up. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you are not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today.
International Women's Day this Sunday for live music from the KBOO studios from 7 to 10 p.m. Shirley Certain and Just Jess will host Annie Dang, Rachel Taylor Brown, and Butterfly Breakdown, as well as some recordings from the KBOO Live Music Archive. At 7 p.m. this Sunday for International Women's Day.
Shake, 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 shake. Come on now and move your hips in. Shake, 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 shake.